Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM. And 7:50 a.m. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you on the Afternoon Drive Tuesday edition of the show. And we have a good one lined up for you. We'll split it between local and national sports. Today, we're going to continue to preview the spring high school sports season. We'll be joined by Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad. That's coming up in just a bit. He's about 10 minutes out here on the show. Also, we're going to be joined by Dan Clayton of SaltCityHoops.com. Great mind as far as Utah Jazz basketball goes. He's covered the Utah Jazz for over a decade. Last night, the Jazz picked up a monumental win right here on KOAL. I mean, it obviously was not a must-win, but I hate the matchup against the Clippers in the opening round. I just don't like it. I think from an individual standpoint, it's poor for the Jazz. They need home court in that series. Last night goes a long way psychologically, and it also helps them gain another game on the Clippers. So they got the victory at home last night. Gordon Hayward was good. Joe Ingles and Joe Johnson were fantastic off of the bench, and Rudy Gobert logged another double-double. The Jazz are now 42-25. So we have 15 games left. They have to win 8 to get to 50. That's been my watch all year. Can they get to 50 wins? I think they're going to get there. Top 4 seed in the Western Conference, at least right now, 2-game lead on the Clippers, a 5-game lead on OKC. So the Jazz are pretty much locked into that 4-5 matchup in the opening round. But we'll talk to Dan Clayton about the win last night in the Clippers. And also, as Gordon Hayward just continues to get better and better and more efficient, his stock continues to rise. And I think it's going to be very difficult for the Jazz to retain their own talent here in the coming years, because they have so many individuals that are going to garner max contracts or close to it. I mean, Rudy Gobert's contract extension will kick in next year. It's at $21 million. Alec Burks is on the hook for $10 and $11 million. Derek Favors is on the hook for $12 million. I mean, really, you may have to start looking, get moving a couple of these contracts. So the Jazz are getting into some interesting and peculiar spots. It's something that OKC went through just a couple of years ago. So we'll take a look at the grand scheme of things for the Utah Jazz as they continue to play good basketball here on the show. Let's take a look at some of the big, major headlines throughout the national sports scene. How about the Seattle Seahawks? Hey, they got a running back. Eddie Lacy agrees to a deal. 1-year contract, and apparently the Seahawks, they want a bigger back to kind of offset Thomas Rawls and CJ Prosize. 1-year deal worth $5.5 million, $3 million of that is guaranteed. Adam Schefter said today on ESPN that the Seahawks still plan to visit with Jamal Charles on Wednesday. I just don't see that happening now. I mean, you got Eddie Lacy, CJ Prosize, Thomas Rawls. You're going to add Jamal Charles to that? Why? Eddie Lacy's only 26 years old. Looked like he was on track for a bounce-back season last year. In fact, I thought Eddie Lacy, in a contract year, he had slimmed down. He looked like he was in shape. I really thought this guy was going to have a standout year. Started out good, and then things went south with an injury. In fact, he was averaging over 5 yards per carry in the first 5 games of the season. And then an ankle injury in week 6 pretty much ruined everything. He had surgery, was placed on injured reserve. Now, how is he going to be used in Seattle? He's at 235 pounds last season. His weight was an issue with the Packers back in 2015. He's rehabbing an ankle. You would think that Eddie Lacy is going to balloon up again. Pete Carroll said today that he wants Eddie Lacy in the 240s. Says he's a big back, he's a big guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. And so really, I mean, if that's the way you're going to use Eddie Lacy, I think that Thomas Rawls and CJ Prosize can benefit heavily from that. Carroll said that he has a preference to go with multiple backs. And if Eddie Lacy is the favorite to get the bulk of the carries, I think it's going to open things up out of the backfield for Rawls and Procise. I think this is a good signing for Seattle if you can get the production out of Eddie Lacy, if he can stay healthy. Again, he's only 26 years old. That was the big news today in the NFL. Now, last week, the Patriots and the Saints connected on a deal that sent Brandon Cooks to New England in exchange for a first and a third round pick. Before that had happened, there were talks of Malcolm Butler going to New Orleans in a trade for Brandon Cooks. He's a restricted free agent and now is scheduled to visit with the Saints at the team's headquarters. This will be on Thursday as New Orleans continues to try to work out a trade with New England. So they could work out multiple trades this offseason. Sean Payton confirmed the visit, telling the Associated Press that he holds Butler in high regard. He's eager to meet with him, and it's a definite position of need for the New Orleans Saints. So as this free agent frenzy continues, you start to see teams start to make more and more moves. The Patriots elected not to trade Butler last week, but now they may be inching a little bit closer to moving him. So that's an interesting development there as the NFL talk continues to maneuver. It's been fun. I mean, really, the NFL has provided us with a lot of storylines this offseason. And speaking of New Orleans, here's another note. They signed Alex Okafor, wrestled him away from the Cardinals, and the Cardinals wasted absolutely no time finding his replacement. They have instead reached out and grabbed Jarvis Jones, the former Pittsburgh Steeler. This was tweeted out earlier today. With Arizona's defense already featuring Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones, I think Jarvis Jones is going to definitely find a seamless transition. He might go down as the Steelers' least productive first-round pick in quite some time, but he did do some good things for that defense, especially against the run. He only had 6 sacks in 4 seasons, but he's athletic, and I think definitely joining the pass rush with Jones and Marcus Golden, I think, is going to be good for Jarvis Jones. So that was some news that also broke today. Kirk Cousins, still don't know what's going to happen with this guy. There's a possibility that he could, in fact, be on the move. The Redskins are still pondering what to do with him, so nothing really on that front. Let's move over to the NBA, and we'll take a look at the schedule. We had a full slate of games yesterday, a little bit shorter slate today. 5 games is all. Detroit will take on Cleveland at 5 p.m. That game is on NBA TV. We get OKC at Brooklyn at 5:30. Now, the Pacers will travel to Madison Square Garden. That game also at 5:30. We get Portland at New Orleans at 6. And then Philadelphia at Golden State. And yes, the Warriors continue to slide. Right now, they no longer have the best record in the Western Conference. That's amazing, isn't it? The San Antonio Spurs are at 52-14, just like the Warriors, so it has evaporated. And the Houston Rockets, who haven't played their best basketball as of late, they're still 6 games back. They have won 6 out of 10. Golden State, they've batted .500 over the last 10 games, searching for answers without Kevin Durant. We're going to break for just a moment. Local sports update coming your way. Plus, we're going to be joined by Coach Jimmy Jukes and also Dan Clayton to talk some Utah Jazz basketball here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. The Emory Lady Spartans were well represented on the 2A All-State basketball teams, which were released yesterday. The voting is done by coaches throughout the 2A classification, while the Deseret News picked the 2A MVP, which was Peyton Torgerson, off the state champion North Sevier Wolves. As far as the All-First Team honors go, Megan Jensen of the Lady Spartans was selected. Only a sophomore, she averaged 14.3 points per contest to go along with 6 rebounds. Selected to the All-State second team was Kinley Toomer. Sophomore guard finished averaging 10.1 points per game along with 4 assists. Laney Jensen was also a member of the second team. She averaged 9.5 points per contest to go along with 3 rebounds and 2 assists per game. And selected to the third team was Caitlin Toomer. She averaged 8 points and 4 rebounds per contest. All of the Lady Spartans who received postseason recognition are sophomores except for Laney Jensen, who is just a junior. The Carbondino boys basketball team had several selections to the All-Region squad. Kyle Quinton was selected to the first team, while Jamin Jensen and Gage Doherty made the second team. Chase Morgan finished with an honorable mention. In the coming days, we will take a look at the 2A and 3A boys All-State squads as the final vote tallies are being accumulated right now. We stick with high school sports, but we move over to soccer. And over the weekend, the Emory Spartans opened up the brand new season, and they finished 2-1 as they traveled down south to the St. George preseason tournament. Emory started off the weekend with a 1-0 victory over Tooele, and they followed that up with a 3-0 victory over Summit Academy. The lone loss of the weekend came in the weekend finale against Delta by a final score of 3-1. Emory will now take a couple of days off before returning to the field this Thursday in just 2 days. They'll travel to take on the Manti Templars. That'll be in the region opener for the Spartans. Now, while Emory will continue the season on Thursday, the Carbon Dino Boys soccer team will be back in action today as they take on the Union Cougars at home. Today's contest is scheduled to begin at 3:30 p.m. The next contest for Carbon will take place on Friday. That'll be a road contest against Salem Hills. It'll mark the first of two consecutive road games, the second coming on Monday at Tooele. Other Carbon High School athletics today, the softball team will travel on the road to meet the Grand Red Devils. This will be in Moab. Start time for this contest is at 3 p.m. In other action today, the Emory Spartan girls softball team will travel to meet North Sam Pete. The Lady Spartans right now are 1-1 on the season. They had a bounce-back performance on Friday as they topped Duchesne. And the Emory Lady Spartans golf team will take to the course as they travel to Green River. This will be their first meet of the season. Tee time is set for 12 p.m. Last night on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m., the Utah Jazz grabbed a monumental 114-108 victory over the Los Angeles Clippers. And in this contest, the Jazz were led by Gordon Hayward, who scored 27 points, knocked down 9 of 18 shots from the field, and also accumulated 4 assists. Rudy Gobert logged a double-double with 11 points and 10 boards, while George Hill scored 19. The bench production was off the charts for the Jazz. Joe Ingles finished with 18 points, and Joe Johnson scored 14. The win was huge for the Jazz as far as the Western Conference standings go. They now sit 42-25, and they have a 2-game lead over the Clippers for the number 4 spot. The Jazz trail Houston by 4 games. The Jazz will return to the court tomorrow as they travel to meet the Pistons at the Palace of Auburn Hills. And again, David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. And you can also listen to all of our coaches' interviews and previous Drive Time Sports shows by clicking on the Drive Time Sports link in the right-hand corner. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Tomorrow, the Carbon High School track and field squad will get the new season off and rolling. They got two meets this week, one at home. Tomorrow, traveling to Cedar City, their first meet of the season. And joining us right now to talk a bit about that, we're going to bring in Coach Jimmy Jukes. We'll go over the offseason, talk about the numbers, and also preview this weekend's event. Coach, it's great to get you on the show today. Thank you.
No, I appreciate coming on.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk some track and field, no doubt, Coach, and we'll dive right into it. I mean, you guys will kick off the season this week. You guys will travel to Canyon View, and then on top of that, you guys will play host to a home meet this Saturday. So it's a very busy week for the track and field squad as you guys just get off and rolling, I mean, quickly.
Yeah, and you know, it's a little later in the year than it usually is for us, which is nice. We've had an extra week of practice than we usually have, and so that's been really, we really needed it this year to kind of get some of these new kids accoladed. I mean, we're up to about 92, 93 kids that are signed up for track.
That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, what's the participation look like this year? I mean, it seems, Coach, that every year I talk to you, the numbers just get bigger and bigger for the track and field program.
They do, which is really good, and we aim for that. You know, the nice thing in track is we don't have to do cuts like other programs do, and so we get to be the good coaches that don't make enemies, you know. And and so it's fun. We have a good group of kids, and the kids that we have in our program do a really good job of getting other kids to come out with them, which just makes the program bigger. And track is a numbers game. The more numbers you have, usually the better the team you have.
What do you contribute to the rising numbers, Coach, over the last few years?
I think that there's, you know, with the numbers rising the way they've been, I think a lot of that deals with, you know, our success. I mean, our girls program up there has gotten really good. We're kind of known as a as one of the teams in the Eastern Utah area to watch. And we won the Eastern Utah Championship twice with the girls team in the last 3 years. And we compete for region title every year. And I think that contributes a lot. And then our boys program is getting better because we've had some good guys come through our program that have really, you know, we had the Garrett Marsings, and then now we've got Kyle Quinton and Derek Hillam. Some of these guys that are, you know, are guys that are key pieces for the Dino basketball team and, you know, the football team and stuff like that are on the track program, and that really helps us out.
Out of the 92, 93 kids that you have on this year's team, how many would you say are double or even three-sport athletes?
I would say probably more, probably about half, at least more, half or more are double sport athletes at least. You've got, you know, some of these kids double up in cross country and track. A lot of the distance program, most of them do. We have kids that play football. We have kids that play basketball. We've got kids that, if they're not doubling up in sports, they're definitely doubling up in school curricular activities. You know, we have a lot of choir students, a lot of band students. It's really fun to watch these kids that excel in other sports. You know, when you go to a basketball game and, you know, half the team is on your track team, it makes you feel pretty good.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. Again, our guest right now is Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbondano Track and Field Squad. As we start talking about the upcoming season, Coach, we'll talk about some of the bright spots for this team. I know we're not even a meet into it yet, but what are some of the events that you would expect this team to excel at, both on the boys and girls side of the field?
You know, we have a lot of really good returners this year. On the boys' side, you know, starting there, we've got, you know, Kyle Quinton and Derek Hillam. They're definitely a force to be reckoned with in the sprints to mid-distance in that 400 range. They're both really good long jumpers. So they bring back a lot of stability on that guys' program, those two. You know, with them, we've got some other kids that are coming up through the program. We have a freshman this year, Carson Frame, that looks like he's going to really help us out a lot. On the distance side of that, we've got Jacob Jukes that's come on really strong, and we have Drew Jones returning. You know, those kids all add in and help us out. On our throwing side, we've got a couple surprises. You know, McCade Bradley has put on, he's been in the weight room lifting for football and stuff, and so he's come out a lot stronger this year. And I got to credit the football coach for getting those kids in, getting them lifting weights and stuff, because that's helped us in the track program there. And then we got another kid, Rylan, that has come out from swimming. And it looks like he's going to be a great thrower on the boys' side. You know, on the girls' side, that's where we're returning a lot of exciting stuff. You know, we've got Sarah Weiler returning for her senior year. You know, she's broke the school record in the long jump last year. So she's, you know, the returning long jump favorite. She's also gotten a lot better in the hurdles, and she's always working hard to improve. I think one of our biggest excitements this year has been Emily Broadbear in our distance, though. Emily's come along really well. She had a great cross-country season, and so she's looking to, you know, finish out strong. And we've got Sadie Crompton in that same area that Sadie's talking about moving down a little bit in distance in track. She's talking about we're going to run her in a 200 on Wednesday and see how that looks. And, you know, we've added to our coaching staff, even having Rochelle Blank come on as our throws coach has added another element to our throws group. And so I look for big things out of our throwing team with our girls and boys programs.
You talk about the throwing events, and correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, but it seems like in years past, those are the events that put teams over the top. I mean, it seems like most schools are going to be competitive in the realm of, you know, of running events. You can accumulate points there, but those who stand out in the throwing events typically win meets.
Right, you know, and that's the thing is, we've kind of, you know, in the past we've had, you know, a phenom come through every so often. Like we had Sarah Morley last year, came through and she won the region title in the shot and the disc, and that really helps if you can do that. And we had Morgan Hillam in there last year, and so, you know, how do you replace those two? What do you do? And having these throws that we have coming up, we got Caitlin Dimmick that's returning. You know, she placed a state in the javelin last year as a freshman. She looks really good. And then we added Jody Noyes off the girls' basketball team, move in, and she's really good in the discus and shot. That adds us in. Maggie Powell has worked in the weight room in the off season, and she's gotten stronger in the shot and disc as well. And so you add that in there, and then you have Lindsay Blank, Lindsay looks amazing this year. She just looks, I'm excited to see what she can do, because she just looks like she is, I think she's going to have a little bit of a surprise season this year for her, because I don't think she sees it, but the rest of the coaches, we're watching her run in practice, and we're all like, man, she looks really good right now.
Coach, let's...
But she's also throwing in that javelin as well.
Coach, let's talk about a couple of the upcoming events for you guys. First off, you're going to travel to Canyon View, and I know this is kind of like a preseason type deal for you guys. You're going to get a good look at what you actually have as far as the team goes. This will be tomorrow, and then after that, it's a home meet. The Farm Bureau Classic, I believe, is what we call it. So, I mean, all in all, there's a lot happening this week for this team.
There is, you know, and that pre-region meet on Wednesday couldn't be at a better spot for us. You know, we'll head down to Canyon View, and we'll take the whole team down there. We've got a lot of young talent that we're excited to see where we're at. And, you know, I tell myself every year, I'm like, man, we're going to compete for region title. We're going to compete for region title. This year, I feel like we are probably the deepest. You know, every year I keep saying, man, we're as deep as we've ever been. And every year, the next year, it's like we're even deeper. We're getting better every year and retooling. And so going down to the region meet, we'll be able to see what our region's retooled look too. And so that'll help us out a little bit and get some of these kids some experience before we hit our big invitational. This weekend is going to be a huge track meet at Carbon High School. We're going to have, right now we're up to 18 schools coming in. We have some of the powerhouses that are coming in. We got Judge Memorial's coming in. We've got Tooele's coming in. Stansbury's coming in. Provo High School's coming in. And so we have some big schools coming in this weekend to compete with. So that competition level is going to be all over the place on Saturday.
No, there's no doubt that every year, I mean, this is one of the more difficult regions in every sport across the board. And it's kind of difficult to peg where you'll be standing until you actually see these kids on the field because of that. I mean, we're talking about some really good schools in this region every single year, Coach.
We are, you know, and in track especially, you run into where the region tends to be good in different areas. You got JUAB that comes out, and they've got in the javelin. I mean, they last year the top four javelin throwers in the state came out of JUAB, you know, and then you go to Richfield, and Richfield's got Shandy Bastion down there. You know, everybody remembers her from basketball and stuff, and she wreaks havoc on the track like nobody else. I mean, she single-handedly won in the region title last year between her and Kinsey Proctor. They lost Kinsey, and they only have Shandy coming back, which is a bonus for us. But you look at that, and you've got to be able to take on these teams that have these kids. And, you know, and you look at the teams that we go up against, and a lot of their star talent are out on the track program. And we're starting to get that way where a lot of our star talent's out on the track program. You know, you got Lindsey Blank, and you've got, you know, Sarah Weiler, and a lot of these kids that are that star quality, and you get them out there. And then at region, it's just how it's going to shake up, you know. And our region's going to be down at Canyon View. It's going to be a little different. That track sits east and west. It's the only track in the state of Utah that sits east and west. Why they built it that way, I don't know. But so that could play a factor in this as well.
Well, before I let you go, Coach, go ahead and invite the community out to watch the home meet on Saturday. Again, if you've never been to a track and field meet, specifically at Carbon, they're a lot of fun. A lot happens at the exact same time. I mean, you're not going to suffer from if you got a short attention span. You're not going to suffer. You're going to be okay.
No, you're not. I mean, and that's the thing, is you're going to get out there. I mean, there's a lot of good things you'll be able to watch this weekend. I mean, we won't have Lindsay this weekend. She's going to be in the All-Star game, basketball All-Star game that weekend, which is good for her that she got selected to that. But we're going to have a lot of talent out there on the field. You'll have the running events start at 10 o'clock, field events start at 9:30. The meet will run till probably 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But, you know, just on the Carbon High side of things, I mean, in the high jump, you're going to have Mikkel Monson. She's looking really good right now. She could really have a chance of winning that at our home meet. You've got, you know, Sarah Weiler in the long jump. You also have her in the hurdles. And you've got girls in the distance, you know, with Emily and Sadie and a lot of these girls. And it's, you come out and watch, and then on the guy side, you got Kyle, and those guys are going to be running the 100, Kyle and Derek and Carter Frame or Carson Frame, and these kids, I mean, you come out and watch them, and they love to have their fans, they love to have the community come out and support them, and it kind of boosts them up over the top when we do that. And so it's free admission, you know, it doesn't cost you anything to go to the track meet. There'll be concessions there that are brought with the Dino Dynamics, I think, are doing our concession stand. And so make sure you come out and support them.
Coach, it's fun to get you back on the air and start talking about some track and field. Looking forward to another season, and hopefully we can catch up next week and recap a busy week for you guys.
Hope sounds good. Thanks, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad. We're going to break for just a minute. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports right after this.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll it. Favors takes a strong and one. Oh my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
We are back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. Now, last night here on KOAL, you heard the Utah Jazz pick up a very important victory topping the Los Angeles Clippers, and we're going to talk about that in depth and more about the Utah Jazz on our next segment. We'll bring in Dan Clayton of SaltCityHoops.com. Dan recently just wrote an article I definitely want to get into as well about the future of Gordon Hayward and the Utah Jazz. Dan covered the Jazz for a long time before leaving the area, but Dan, it's great to get you on the show today. I really appreciate you taking the time for us. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk with the homeland.
Yeah. So, I mean, you kind of have an interesting journey. So you covered the Utah Jazz for a very long time, and now you're in Brooklyn, right?
Yeah. Moved to Brooklyn for my quote-unquote day job about 3 years ago, but before that I had covered the Jazz for about 10 years on credential, mostly for Spanish-speaking outlets, and including the last 4 years I was the Spanish radio commentator for the game broadcasts.
Well, definitely looking forward to getting some insight from you. Let's start by talking about the most recent victory, a big one over the Clippers. I mean, we talked about this game yesterday. Definitely the most important contest up to date for the Jazz. I'm not a huge fan of this matchup, but it's looking more and more likely like it is going to be the first round matchup for the Jazz. Last night, they take care of business at home.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you're talking about being a playoff team and getting ready to play in the playoffs for the first time since 2012, you're going to face a good team. So I get some of the trepidation from people who say, oh, the Clippers make me nervous. Well, guess what? You know, OKC should make Jazz fans nervous, and Houston should make Jazz fans nervous, and Memphis should make Jazz fans nervous. You're going to face a good team if you go to the playoffs, and I think the Jazz are in a position where they need to, embrace that and, you know, move forward and be excited about the chance to get some experience and credential themselves against, you know, a real live Western Conference playoff team. And the fact that they kind of lived up to that challenge last night was really encouraging, especially because, you know, the Clippers didn't really give them an inch. The Clippers have a smart game plan. The Clippers came, you know, prepared to make several runs, and the Jazz just kind of kept their eyes on the prize and kept going, even though there were some stretches that didn't go the way they wanted.
Now, offensively, last night, the Jazz were absolutely brilliant. For those who missed the game, they put up a 40 spot in the third quarter. That's not to say that the Clippers weren't great last night offensively either, Dan. They shot 50% even from the field, and yet the Jazz still found a way to get this victory 114-108. I mean, that statistic in itself is very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, the Jazz haven't won a ton of games where they've done it that way with a crazy high offensive efficiency, and I think, again, I think both teams were really good at taking what the other team was giving them on defense and running with it. I think for the Jazz's part, they were defending the Clippers' pick-and-roll action. That the Clippers are a pick-and-roll team, like they're the pick-and-roll team, and the Jazz were defending that by really staying close to the screener. They didn't want to let Blake Griffin go off. They didn't want to give DeAndre Jordan a bunch of lob dunks. And so they kind of invited Chris Paul to beat them as a scorer, and that's what Chris Paul did. He had his season high, but the Jazz were able to keep those other guys in check. And then on the other end of the court, the Clippers were really packing the paint and trying to wall off the Jazz's drives, and that led to a bunch of open threes. The Jazz had 15 threes last night that were classified as open or wide open, and they canned 12 of them. So again, they were just sort of taking what the Clippers' defense wanted to grant them, and they made the most of it.
You know, we talk a lot about what would be next for this team. And I mean, last night, Boris Diaw plays 21 minutes. That was a signing in the offseason that I was very happy with, considering his experience. And you mentioned it, this team hasn't been to the postseason since 2012. But as we get deeper and deeper into the year, Joe Johnson is a guy that, look, this is a move that is going to pay dividends for the Jazz, especially moving forward now that we're getting down to crunch time. He was pretty good last night, Danny. Wasn't too shabby.
Oh, man. I mean, Joe's been huge in a lot of games, including in games where the stat sheet doesn't even necessarily show you the importance that he plays. The lineups that the Jazz have trotted out there with Joe Johnson at the four next to Rudy Gobert have been really successful all season long, and now the team is starting to deploy those more. Quinn Snyder is starting to go to those lineups more. But I just think that there's a calmness about him, and it's hard to quantify this or even necessarily recognize it when you see it. It's just stuff that would make other players panic because they haven't been in, you know, every conceivable basketball situation like Joe Johnson has. Like, take that moment when the ball came loose on a George Hill drive, and, you know, the ball is loose and bouncing on the court with 2 seconds on the shot clock, and I think a younger player or a player who hasn't been in a lot of basketball situations would freak out and go, ah, what am I supposed to do? And Joe Johnson just sees that ball and is like, I should get that basketball and put it in the basket sometime in the next 2 seconds. And that's what he did. And I just think he has a composure to him that is really going to benefit the Jazz, not just in their last 15 regular season games, but into the postseason as well.
Again, our guest right now is Dan Clayton, covers the Utah Jazz for SaltCityHoops.com. Dan, let's talk about this recent article that you have produced. I mean, it really a fantastic read, and we'll give the listeners the info on where they can read it as well, because I'm telling you, if you're a Jazz fan, you definitely want to read it. Great insight. Let's talk about Gordon Hayward and how this guy has continued to evolve. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Gordon Hayward over the last couple of years. He was a restricted free agent just a couple of seasons ago. What's the future hold for him in Utah? When you look at the season that Gordon Hayward has had, right now, leading the team in scoring with 22 points per contest. He's actually, I mean, his efficiency just continues to skyrocket, it seems like, throughout the entire season. He's been that reliable for the team. What does the future hold in your eyes for Gordon Hayward?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question for the Utah Jazz, because he has an opt-out this summer, and because of the exploding NBA salary cap, he's a shoe-in to exercise that option. He will, or rather to decline the option to exercise the right to become a free agent. The option year would have paid him a little over $16 million. And he's going to opt out, and he's going to have his choice of offers that start in the $30 million range. And you know what? He deserves it. I know that sounds like a lot of money, but the way the cap is exploding, and, you know, I think fans just have to take a stuff costs what it costs kind of mindset, because you don't get star players if you're not willing to pay star player money, and that's star player money in the NBA now with the way salaries are inflating. So I think the Jazz have the right mindset, which is I think the front office is willing to pay what it takes to keep Gordon Hayward. $30 million is a lot of money, but the cost, both, you know, basketball-wise and just to the franchise, of losing that type of a player is worse. So you just pay it. You just do what it takes. And I think that that's the way they're thinking about it. But, you know, there's no guarantee that Hayward stays. I think he's more likely to stay than leave at this point. But then the other thing that gets tricky is if you're paying him $30 million, Rudy Gobert's extension is about to kick in at $20 million. They're going to try to keep George Hill. I don't know exactly where his market value is going to be, but let's say it's probably at least somewhere in that same $20 million range. You start to add that together, and it gets really tough for the Jazz, who have historically not wanted to be a luxury tax-paying team. The luxury tax limit next year is going to be about $120 million. So you start to say, wow, are they going to have enough freedom to put a roster together around those guys that can continue to be relevant in the Western Conference? And I think that's the set of questions that is really going to drive this summer for the Jazz. But it all starts with, is their star player going to continue to be their star player?
Right, and I do agree with you. I do believe Gordon Hayward will stay here long-term with the Jazz. But, you know, you bring up a fine point, and I don't want to get too abstract here into what-ifs, but, I mean, if you look at the salary, if you're going to pay Gordon Hayward that max, and, again, you bring up the idea of Rudy Gobert's contract extension kicking in next year at $21 million. Joe Johnson's going to be on the books next year for $10.5, which at this point in time, it looks like a bargain, believe it or not. Some of the contracts, such as Derek Favors at $12 million, maybe Alec Burks at $10 million. Those are a couple of contracts that you may just have to move.
Yeah, that's a really real possibility at this point. Boris Diaw's contract next year, by the way, is $7.5 million, and it's fully non-guaranteed if the Jazz waive him by July 17th. Even that's an option. And Boris Diaw has been good for the Jazz in different spots. I mean, you know, a lot of his raw counting stats don't look great, but lineups with Boris Diaw in them have been successful, and that's a sacrifice they may need to make to get this to all, you know, congeal from a salary standpoint. So they're going to have to make tough decisions, and that's the downside of building through the draft, is you get to a point where all of a sudden, if everybody pans out the way you want them to pan out, you can't pay everybody. You know, at some point, every team that goes through this rebuilding process has to look themselves in the mirror and decide, you know, who are the 3, 4, 5 guys we're really going to build around, and who is superfluous. And that doesn't mean that they don't want them. That just means that you can't necessarily afford to pay 8 guys starting, you know, starter caliber money. The Jazz have another interesting decision coming up with Joe Ingles. I mean, Joe Ingles has been really important to the Jazz. And if you take their preferred starting lineup and you put Joe Ingles in that spot instead of Rodney Hood, that group has been better than with Rodney Hood. And I'm not saying that you should change the starting lineup. Rodney Hood's a good basketball player. But I'm just saying that's another tough one that, Joe's top 5 in the league in 3-point shooting. He's going to cost some money to keep. So, again, you just start to have all of these decisions kind of coming together at once. Rodney Hood and Dante Exum will both be extension eligible this summer and fall. So all of a sudden the Jazz are in a place where, for years it's been the idea of putting assets together, putting young players together who might be good someday. Jazz are at a point where they almost need to figure out who are the guys they're really banking on and who are the guys who, hey, we'll keep you around if it makes financial sense for us.
Right. They obviously, it's not to the same level of media scrutiny, but they're floating down the same waters that OKC was down just a couple of years ago. I mean, it's a very similar situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're referring to when they moved James Harden because they were sort of committed to Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook being
Correct.
Their stars, right?
Yeah.
And now James Harden is an MVP candidate, and he's not a terribly well-liked player, especially in Utah, so I'm sure there will be people who will bristle at the comparison, but it's totally apt. I mean, the Jazz may have to get to a point where they say, just to use your example, where they say, hey, Alec Burks, you no longer really fit with what we're doing in Utah, and then trade him someplace else and watch him score 16 or 18 points a game, you know, if he has that in him. I'm not sure if he does, but, I mean, that's the type of thing that the Jazz may have to live with, like OKC is still living with today relative to the Harden decision, especially if it's Favors, because I'll tell you, I've always been a big Favors proponent. I think he's a special player in terms of his two-way ability. He can score and he can defend, and the way he can defend is unique because he's both a paint protector and he's someone who can guard out in space and guard switches, you know, when his body's right. His body hasn't been right all this year, so we haven't really seen that, but I think Favors is a special player and probably Utah's third or fourth best player overall, and yet, like you said, you know, $12 million, they may be in a situation next year where to make things work, they have to find out, hey, what would Derek Favors and a first-round pick get us on the trade market this June? You know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. But just like with Harden, it could be a decision that the Jazz make begrudgingly and then think about for years while they watch one of their players go be successful somewhere else.
Dan Clayton, again, of SaltCityHoops.com. Dan, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, so the article you were referring to was at bballbreakdown.com, one of the sites I contribute to. I also write weekly, and I'm the associate editor at saltcityhoops.com. It's a True Hoop affiliate covering all things Utah Jazz. And I'm on Twitter at Dan Clayton with a 0 for the O. So those are all places where you can find me talking long-windedly about basketball.
Now, Utah Jazz basketball in particular, which of course the listeners love. Dan, it was a pleasure to get you on the show today. Hopefully we can get you on relatively soon as we make a push down the final stretch of the regular season.
Sounds good. I'd love that, Jordan. Thanks.
Definitely a pleasure to get Dan on the show here for the very first time. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up straight ahead right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Yeah, what's up? This is Middle World Peace, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskery.
If you watch college basketball, specifically Pac-12 basketball, you know exactly who Lonzo Ball is. The oldest of three brothers, LiAngelo and LaMelo Ball. And LaMelo is the young high school kid. He's 15, I believe. He's already committed to UCLA. Scored 100 points in a high school game this year. LiAngelo scored like 65 and 72 this past season. Like, they're talented. And LaMelo doesn't play a lick of defense, but this kid can shoot from like midcourt. He'll pull up and launch from midcourt in the middle of a high school basketball game. The kid doesn't care. So if you've watched college basketball, you know exactly who Lonzo Ball is, and you've probably heard of their brothers. Now, if you were unaware of the Ball brothers, you probably know who their father is, LaVar Ball. And this guy is getting obnoxious and really out of control. Earlier, he said one of his sons, I can't remember which one, would be better than Steph Curry. He later said that Lonzo Ball would only play for the Lakers. He clarified that at a later date. Now he's stating that his boys will garner a $1 billion shoe contract. You want all three of them together, it's going to be $1 billion, $100 million over 10 years. That's what he wants for his kids. And it just seems like the media is eating this up, and they keep going back to him. So he hasn't been shy about hyping up his children, which is really unfair to them. Lonzo Ball seems like a very nice kid. You don't hear too much from him. LaMelo Ball is a little bit cocky. He's the youngest of the kid of the brothers. And again, this is a kid that's pulling up from midcourt, scoring 100 points in a game. He seems a little bit more outspoken. Lonzo just goes about his business and plays the game. But it's his dad that continues to hype him up, and it's really unfair. Now LaVar Ball is hyping himself up. Almost as if he couldn't handle all the attention that his boys were getting, he wants everyone to know just how good at basketball he was now. He says, back in my heyday, this is an actual quote, told the USA Today this, back in my heyday, I would kill Michael Jordan one-on-one. This is really what he said. I would just go back in and lift him up off the ground and call a foul every time he fouls me when I do a jump hook to the right or to the left. He cannot stop me one-on-one. He better make every shot because he can't go around me. He's not fast enough, and he can only make so many shots outside before I make every bucket under the rim. We're talking about Michael Jordan here. 6-time NBA champion, 9-time first team all defense, generally considered the best basketball player to ever live. And when I heard this outlandish statement, I actually had to go see if LaVar Ball even played college basketball. I didn't even know. Apparently he did. He played for Washington State, averaged 2.2 points a game, shot 45% from the free throw line, played in 26 games. So I could see how this 6'6 dude who played in 26 games from Washington State would beat Michael Jordan one-on-one. Yeah, I believe that. But you know, this is why I bring this up here on the show, because it has become a somewhat relevant topic. Will teams in the NBA stray away from Lonzo Ball because their father continues to make idiotic statements and continues to create some sort of hype around his kids? I mean, his kids are they're open. They're honest when they say they are only going to play college basketball for 1 year. And then they're going straight to the NBA. LaMelo, who can't even drive yet, has said he's going to play 1 year at UCLA, and then he's going to go pro. And I can respect the honesty there. But how much of this hype that their father continues to spew out into the national media do they believe? And that's the problem. And like I said, Lonzo Ball, he's fantastic. He's a top five player in the country. I believe he'll be a top three pick in the NBA draft. But as we get closer to the draft, because of these outlandish statements that LaVar Ball continues to make to the media, he's going to continue to get interviews. I know the way the media works. You can be a 12th man on the roster, on an NBA roster. If you make one outlandish statement, the next city you go into, people want the next sound clip from you. And that's what's happening from LaVar Ball. Now, when you get to college, I could see schools straying away from players because of an outlandish parent like LaVar Ball. I mean, this is a completely insane level. But would NBA teams really keep away from Lonzo Ball because of LaVar? I don't think so.